I am so touched that you have all come. It means a lot to me. I would like to tell you, it's a story I have told before, but it's well worth hearing. When I was a young man, 21 years old, I decided that the goal of life is to seek God. I was a man who had done everything to avoid that thought. Everything possible, because I thought it was... I knew nothing about the lives of saints. I didn't know saints existed. I thought that at the most a saint would be a kindly gentleman or lady who helps old people across the street. And, that's better. And I thought, therefore, because the thing I wanted from early childhood was to know the truth. And I sought truth in science, in astronomy. I wanted to be an astronomer, in art, in poetry, in music, in politics, in just about every field you can think of. And I found that every one of them led to a dead end. And every time I reached that dead end, I thought the only thing that will help, only thing that can solve these great dilemmas that science has posed us, that modern politics have posed us, that modern skepticism and materialism have posed us, every time I saw that the answer to it all is to know God. And I remember I was studying stagecraft. I wanted to be a playwright, and because I wanted to help people to know the truth. And when I realized that I myself didn't know the truth, I decided to give up writing because I did not want to flood the world with my ignorance. And so I remember one night in Charleston, I took a long walk and I said, well, if there is a God, what must he be like? And I thought, well, he cannot be somebody up in the clouds waiting for us to make a mistake so he can clap us into hell. There has to be some reason for it. Why am I asking this question? That's because I'm conscious. I'm aware of the problem. If I have consciousness, then God must be consciousness. He cannot have a form. This universe is much too large for a person to have created it. It has to be an infinite consciousness. And as I thought further, mind you, I knew nothing of Vedanta philosophy. I knew nothing of Indian teachings. I didn't know any words in Indian philosophy. I remember one person in a restaurant in Charleston, South Carolina, spoke to me. He said, you ought to read the Bhagavad Gita. I said, what's that? I didn't know. But I always remembered that name. It had an anciently familiar ring to it. And when I finally decided that what I did want was God, this night I walked out and thought, well, if God is consciousness and I am conscious, that means I am a part of him. I am his manifestation. And if I am his manifestation, then I see that there are times in my life when I am happier, times in my life when I'm unhappy. It seems to me that the solution to life is to come closer to God. And that when I am more in tune with him, when I know him more, when I'm closer to him in my consciousness, then I know more happiness. And when I'm less in tune with him, when I think of my desires and anything personal, I lose that happiness. Therefore, the goal of life has to be one. It has to be the search for our own self in God. And I decided then and there that I would dedicate my life to seeking God. I remember I was rooming with four other young men at that time, and I came in, my head was so spinning with the grandeur of these thoughts, and they were all laughing at me. They said, oh, he's so serious all the time, but I thought they sounded like the yapping of puppies to me. I just realized this is not what life is all about. It's not to have fun. It's not to make money. It's not to become wealthy. I remember even when I was 16, my father wanted to buy me a tuxedo. I said, "Dad, don't bother. I will never wear it. In fact, I will never earn enough money to pay income tax." How I knew this, I don't know, but I did know it. And the wonderful thing was God helped me because, mind you, I didn't know anything. A week before I met my guru, I had never heard the word guru. I had never heard the word karma or dharma or all these words that are so familiar even to Westerners today. And my father, with God's grace, was sent by his company, which was Esso, to explore for oil in Egypt. And my mother was still closing things down in Scarsdale, and she was going to go join him. The very day I put her on the ship to go join my father, I discovered Autobiography of a Yogi. It was really a miracle. If she had been there, if my father had been there, it would have been very difficult to do something that seemed absolutely goofy. And yet I knew in my heart this is what I had to do. I read Autobiography of a Yogi and absolutely it changed my mind. I took the next bus, 3,000 miles, that's 4 nights and 4 days by bus. And I said to Yogananda when I met him, words that I had never imagined I would address to anybody. I said, "I want to be your disciple." He accepted me right then, because he saw I was an overripe fruit. I had two desires in crossing the country. First, my desire had been to be a hermit. And I didn't know anything about India. I thought maybe I can live more cheaply in South America in some jungle there. And so I had determined to try to save money to go to South America and spend my life as a hermit, meditating. But I did always have this deep-seated desire to be a hermit, but I had another one that supplanted it. And my guru pushed me into this direction. But in fact, even as I was crossing America, I had two desires. One was to find God, and the other was to help other people to find him. And these two desires have been with me all my life. To me, the meaning of my birthday is not that I've somehow managed to hang in there for 83 years. It is that I have been able to make other people love God. And to me, that's the meaning of my life. I don't matter. I'm not a person who has any importance. I've done a number of things in my life, but they have had only one purpose, and that has been to inspire other people to seek joy in themselves. So when I met my guru, he saw this in me, and he put me in charge of the monks within a year that I'd been with him. And he kept pushing me in this direction. He said, "You have a great work to do." And I never thought of myself as important, but I thought, if I can serve this work, then I will be so honored and grateful. And so in my life, I have done, as I said, a few things, but one of the most important, I remember first I wanted at the age of 15 to start communities, but I didn't know why yet. And in 1949, 1 year after I'd met him, I met him in 48 at the age of 22. And it was a garden party in Beverly Hills. And I have to say, very few people would have had this kind of courage. There were 800 people there, many of them Hollywood people, Beverly Hills people, wealthy people. And I'm sure that when he got up to speak, everybody expected him to say, "Thank you for the beautiful party. I'm so happy to be here and to be with you all, and thanks to our host, and thanks to the people who made tea," or whatever it was. I have never in my life heard a more powerful lecture. He said, "Thousands of youths must go north, south, east, west, everywhere to spread this principle of living for God. He came for that purpose. And I vowed in my heart that I would do everything I could to make that a reality. It has been my honor and blessing that many people have joined me. We have at least 1,000 people living in our communities, in several communities. India is the last. And you may wonder, well, why did you come here last? I wanted to get it well set. We're now in our 40th anniversary. That's a long enough time to know and to declare to the world that what we have done works. Now, Master often said that there is a Great Depression coming, much worse than the 1930s. What we have seen so far is just the beginning. And at this time, and people are actually, many articles are coming out in newspapers and magazines in America saying that the answer is obviously to join together with other people, grow your own food, get land in the country, and live a simple life. I'm so glad that America is understanding this. I want India to understand it. You have your villages, but the villages are not the same thing. They're not based on ideals, they're just that people happen to be born in the same place. But these communities are people formed of people who want to know God. And it's not an ashram in the sense of monastery, but it's an ashram in the sense of everybody living together for God. We find great harmony here. You rarely see animosity or misunderstandings. And if you do, the wonderful thing about it is that the first question people ask is, where did I go wrong? Not why did you do that? And it's a wonderful thing to see so many people, as Mr. Kartikayan was saying, so many people living happily together, harmoniously together. And I'm very grateful that I've been able to bring what I believe will be a new way of life. I think that this idea, I'm quoting my guru, so I more than think it, I have faith, that this idea will spread like wildfire. It's a new way of living where in families you don't have that kind of harmony often that we have in our communities. Your true family, Jesus Christ put it beautifully when he said, "Who is my father and mother and brother and sister? Except those who love God." It's not enough to be born into a family. We've all got to come somehow. And some families are happy and God bless them. But how many brothers are suing brothers? How many children don't take care of their parents when they get old? How many parents are unkind to their children? It's not the ideal. When you have people who... I left my family, and thank God that my parents were in Egypt, and my other members of my family, they thought I was absolutely mad. Fortunately, Egypt, especially in those days, you couldn't fly from Cairo to catch me and drag me by the hair or whatever back. I was free. I actually, my godfather worked also in Rockefeller Center, and I stopped by to tell him that I was going to California to be a part of this group that I thought could help me to find God. And fortunately, he was also not in the office, so I just left him a note. Nobody could stop me. And when I got there, I had never in my life found so much happiness. When you live with people who have high ideals, you become an inspiration. You can talk about these things, you can write these things, but when they see it in practice, that's when they become convinced. We have people now coming to Ananda Village, which was the first of these that we started 40 years ago. And people come all the way from Taiwan, from China, from India, from Australia, from all over the world. And many have joined us. We have people from many parts of the world. But I believe that India, I've always considered India the guru of the world. When I go around the streets of Delhi today, I wonder how I can think that. Master said that India and America will someday join hands and lead the world on the path of Dharma and creative materialism, that is, giving and not taking. This will happen someday. But he said that going to push these two nations in this direction, he said that many Indians are being born in America. I'm certainly one of them. Many Americans are being born in India. And you walk down the streets and you see many of them look like stock Wall Street brokers. But there is this need for harmony, for unity, and this is what I hope very much Ananda can accomplish here. But it won't do it without your help. We are a beachhead. Most of us are Americans, Europeans, but now more and more, as you saw among our singers. When I first came to India, I wondered if people would like my music because it's different and it's in harmony. In Indian singing, they don't know harmony. But thank God it has worked very well. And my program has reached many millions of people. We had to stop the program because we had to use the money that we were paying for it to help build this property near Pune. But I would love for you, all of you who feel this kind of harmony, if you can understand what I discovered that night walking on my own out in the darkness of Charleston, South Carolina, that the purpose of life is to find yourself and to find God as yourself. Everything else is a waste of time. I have to say that. You get money and you have a beautiful home and then you're gone. And what was it all for? And how many people die and wonder, what was it all for? Very few people. I remember one of my Guru Bhais said to my Guru, "I don't think I have very good karma, Master." He replied, "It takes very, very, very good karma even to want to know God." If you have this desire, and I must assume you have it or you wouldn't be here tonight, take it seriously. You have a wonderful opportunity to reach for the stars. There's no other purpose in life. Every other desire you can ever have is going to disillusion you. Maya keeps one promise always. It breaks its promises. You can be sure it will break its promise. Nothing that people want in this world will give them what they're looking for. And once you've reached that point and understood that what you really want, and this is the reason we should love everybody, because Swami Shankaracharya said it, God can be defined as Satchidananda, ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss. And everybody comes from that. Everybody is a manifestation of that. And everybody wants, there are two things everybody in the world wants. First is to avoid pain. And the second is to find happiness. And the worst criminal has these two desires. He kills other people because he thinks they're bothering him. He wants to get rid of that pain. It won't work. Nothing works, really, but people try again and again. They think through money, through power, through sex, through fame, through all the things that people look for. But at the end of their life, I remember what Howard Hughes, who was the wealthiest man in the world at in his day, he was asked a week before he left his body, "Are you happy?" He said, "Nah, I can't say I'm happy." His tone of voice said it better than his words. Nobody is happy until he knows God. And I'm not saying go out and be a hermit. We'd have to build cities in the jungles. But I'm saying, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Nishkam karma, act without desire for the fruits of your action. Give everything to God. And you will find yourself becoming freer and freer until finally I can say that the one thing I've found that really makes life worthwhile is bliss. Bliss is the goal of life. And if there's one thing I want to share with people, it's bliss. And I hope through two means especially to accomplish this goal. Because if I talk to people in a crowd and they go home, they feel very well for that night. And by next night, they're bothered about everything else. To start communities. This is a book that I wrote many years ago in honor of our 20th anniversary. And it's called Cities of Light. It's a wonderful book because it's talking about a wonderful place. And what has made the place wonderful is the people in it. It isn't a system. It's that we have learned to love each other and learned that the goal of life is God and seeking God and seeking bliss. And I would love to urge you. I don't know how much longer I will live. 83 is already older than my Param Guru lived. His Yogananda's chief woman disciple lived. Many people have kicked the bucket, so to speak, or had it in their dinner pail by the time they reach my age. And I would say that if you can understand this while I'm still living, I'll be more grateful than I can tell you, much more grateful than just having another birthday. But if I can inspire you, and if you read this book, I think it will help to inspire you. This is when you reach an older age, and I'm not an old person, 83 is old for the body, but for the mind, I'm just young. I have no age. And if you can live this way to understand that that is the goal, then your life will be worthwhile. When you reach the other world, you will say, I've done a good thing. When the devatas ask you, or the yama asks you, have you lived the way I want you to, you'll be able to say yes. And the other thing that I want very much to start is schools. They say that as the twig inclines, so does the tree grow. Schools are very important. And I think that the reason, this is an article that came out in the Speaking Tree in the Times of India today, and I think that was the article that Preeti was talking about, that the goal of education is not just to prepare children for getting a good job. I'd say it was better to live on nothing. I remember there was one time in my life when I had to live on $10 a month. It was fine, I didn't mind it at all. Money doesn't give you happiness, things don't give you happiness, but if you have happiness in your heart, that's all you really want. And so, this school system that we have started in America, it is now 40 years old, nearly. We have children who are getting an education, and the one interesting thing, because parents are always asking, they always ask, but will this give them a good education? Well, happiness is a good education. So then they say, well, will they get good jobs? And I'm very happy to be able to report. And 40 years is a good time to give this system a test also. That many children, if they leave our schools, or if they graduate from our schools, whatever the case, they are always in the top 5 percentile of our country in education. They always get very high marks, and when they go to another school, usually they can become leaders in the student body. So it does not make them incompetent materially. Rather, it helps them to become more capable of handling themselves. They become leaders because they're secure in themselves. So our system, although we teach how to be happy, how to get along with one another, how to find peace of mind, all the things that everybody wants, it does not incapacitate them materially. It makes them much more able to concentrate and much more capable of success in any field. And mind you, not many of them become sadhus, but all of them are much more successful in the world. Therefore, I would say, please keep that thought in mind. the schools that we hope to start here in India, that Preeti has begun by building this school here. This town, is it DLF3? I think so. Is that right?
Yeah.
DLF3, so very close to here. I think that this will change people's consciousness. India, when I lived here, I came to India first in 1958, which is 51 years ago. And I saw much more spirituality then. When I met Abdul Kalam and Mr. Kartikeyan took me to him, he said, "Do you like the direction India is taking?" I said, as a sadhu, I couldn't say that I like it, but I see that it is necessary. India has to take its place alongside the great countries of this world. India has to become efficient materially, and I don't regret it. Even when I lived here 50 years ago, I was thinking of ways to create cars that every clerk could buy. Finally, Tata has done this. But even then, you could drive easily in the streets. They weren't the kind of cars that you see now. And you'd think that I, as a sadhu, would not want those things. I do want them. India has to be recognized by the world as one of the great countries, and in fact, India is. And it is not today, but it will become, because this yoga bhumi is so powerful. It's in the soil of India. You can't get rid of it. India, when they have what they need, will come back to this. And often it says in the Gita, for example, that what happens to a yogi when he falls? And Krishna answers beautifully. He says that nothing is lost spiritually. Whatever you want, whatever step you take to seek God, that will remain with you. You may be born into a wealthy family so you can work out your desires more quickly. India, when it has gotten what it wants right now, and it's not a wrong desire, God doesn't want to make us beggars and poverty-stricken. He wants us to be successful in life. But when Indians have discovered that, they will do what many Rajarshis in India did. They left their throne to their son and went off into the forest. And when you've seen that what you want from life is that, India will turn back to that. In the meantime, why should we love everybody? Because everybody, the worst criminal in the world, wants, as I said earlier, Satchitananda. Everybody wants bliss. And when you see that, how can you hate anybody? They all want just what you want. They may want it in the wrong way, but it takes a few incarnations, let's admit it, many incarnations. It takes 5 to 8 million lifetimes even to reach the human level. And when you reach the human level, you have the capacity, because you have the brains, to make mistakes. And so you can go downhill as well as uphill. It may take a long time. This may not be the first day of Brahma that you are living in this body, in these earthly bodies. It's no joke. When you think that all the time, all the incarnations, millions of them, that you've been seeking the truth and not finding it, isn't it time you woke up and realize that what you really want is happiness, and the only thing that will give you happiness is God? And most people think, yeah, well, someday, but in the meantime, a good bank account, a nice home, a beautiful wife or husband, all these things that people seek. As I said, the one thing that Maya always, it always breaks its word. No one is really happy unless he has that happiness inside. So my two things that I have tried more than anything else is, I've written a lot of music, I've written a lot of books, I've given lots of lectures and so on. But the one thing I want is to help everybody to find this bliss inside and to live together with people who want it. Because if you live with worldly people, you end up thinking you're doing a good thing if you help a little old lady across the street. is so much more to finding God. And when you can live for Him, and when you can have that real desire for freedom, you will know what life is about, and not until then. So I pray that any message you could receive from me this evening, forget about my age, that doesn't mean anything. But first of all, I want to say that all of you are my greatest blessing, because people are much more important than things. And this is one of the principles on which Ananda has been based. People are more important than things. Another principle, the other two principles we have, the other one, is Yata Dharma Stata Jaya. And I have lived by that principle always. I've met many Swamis in India who cut corners ethically in order to do what they thought was a good thing, like building an ashram or whatever. I have never cut corners. I've been willing to let everything fail rather than cut a corner ethically. I've believed very sternly and strictly in Dharma. If you live by Dharma, you will find you always come out ahead. And I can say that after a lifetime of many tests and many threats to the destruction of everything I have lived by. But I have said firmly, I don't care if I fail, but I will follow the truth. If you do these things, and if you do them with other people, because it's much easier when you live with other people, you will find another wonderful thing about communities is that, and I don't like to talk about this so much because I don't want to offer a materialistic reason for living with others, but I have to say it's the best insurance policy you can have. If you lose a job, there's everybody there to help you. If you have to go to the hospital, people can help pay for it. If a couple get married, they can have gifts to send them on a beautiful honeymoon, and they help each other. And this is so much more important than just living for yourself, which essentially, being a sadhu myself, I say it, if my only purpose were that, it wouldn't be enough. You have to get rid of the ego, and you can get rid of this ego by giving to others. And in our schools, as I said in the paper this morning under the speaking tree, I keep getting it mixed up with the wishing tree, which our shop here. If you do this, you will see that right living gives you happiness. You are happier when you give than when you take. All these principles that all religions teach, but very few people follow, the real reason for following them is that you find happiness in yourself. So that and our schools are the second most important thing. And one thing that Yogananda found in coming to America was that the parents had to be persuaded before they would send their children to the schools. But you will find in time that the children who go to these schools, they're very happy children. You don't find them all bullying, or some of them bullying each other and so on. They help each other. One of our methods of teaching is by example. One time we had a snowfall in Ananda village, the first snowfall of the winter. And the children got together and had a snowball fight. And the little children were crying because they couldn't stand up to the bigger children. And all these snowballs hitting them, they were unhappy. Then afterwards, they decided to build a snowman together. And the... Can you hear me still?
Yes.
And the teachers thought this would be a wonderful opportunity. And so they got the children together, and they said to them, which did you enjoy more, the snow fight, the snowball fight, or building the snowman? And they all said that they liked building the snowman together better. Why did you like it better? Because we found that we were able to work together, to be peaceful, to be cooperative. And so in these ways, our teachers are not just telling their children the principles of mathematics. They're helping them to learn how to live. All the suicides that are so notorious in India, some of it is due, yes, to being pushed too hard to learn. That's not fair to a child. Children should also enjoy life. But it's also something else, that modern education all over the world is atheistic. And what we need is to help people to understand that there is meaning in life, there are values in life. And when they can see that living rightly makes them happier, then they automatically, you don't have to tell them, be happy, be good, be generous, be kind. They automatically are happy and good and kind. And this is how we see our students in our schools. It's really a wonderful experience. They aren't brought up to be brats. They're brought up to be responsible, kind, cooperative human beings. So please help me in this work, because I'm doing it for you, not for me. I've got it, but if you don't have it, this is how to get it. And so I pray for you, and I thank you for coming and sharing my birthday with me. But this is the purpose of my life. I have no other. God bless you.